It's been 5 years since I've had a raise in pay. Way things are going, I could get laid off any day. Sure is hard living with all.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon and happy 5th of July to everybody. Hope you had a great 4th of July long weekend. A lot of folks enjoyed the entire weekend off. I didn't have to do a lot of work, but in fact, didn't get any days off. But Anyway, we got caught up on a little work we needed to do, and that's always a good thing. I hope you had a good 4th of July. Was able to enjoy the typical 4th of July meal yesterday afternoon. You know, the old barbecued hot dogs and hamburgers and potato salad and baked beans and all that sort of thing. It was wonderful. All those things you shouldn't touch, but it was good nonetheless. So hope you all had a great 4th of July weekend, too. I know the beaches around here were busy and the fireworks were popping off last night. I watched on TV. I don't know. Somehow it's not the same watching it on TV. I watched some of the Washington, D.C. fireworks and some of the New York City fireworks. But I don't know. I guess when you get to be my age, I don't know. Fireworks just don't do it for you anymore like they used to. I don't know. My goodness, it was an eventful weekend, if nothing else. Many, many things going on. Of course, we had Kim Jong-il's shenanigans yesterday, which the press went absolutely berserk over. Boy, they just grasp every little straw, don't they? You would have thought an attack was coming any minute. They just, oh my God, he shut off these rockets. Never mind that they fell in the Sea of Japan. I don't know. I don't know if it's that big a news or not. What else? We got, the Mexican election. That was a big deal, and it's yet to be known who really won it. From what I understand, in fact, I've gotten some information from folks that maybe our FBI was helping the Conservative Party down there work on the election. Oh, I'd hate to find out that were true. I really would. And Kenny Lay. You know, I said he'd never go to prison. I wasn't sure it would be quite this way. But Kenny Lay is not going to go to prison. Dead at 64 years of age, a man of immense wealth at one time, probably still pretty wealthy at the time of his death, died in, I think it was Vail, Colorado, of a massive heart attack is what they're saying. But he's not going to jail, so that case is over and done with, and I imagine there's a lot of people in Washington going, whew, you know, because who knows what Kenny might have opened his mouth and said about the secret energy meetings or whatnot in order to get himself a little bit better deal. I imagine Dick Cheney's breathing a little easier today, if, in fact, anything shakes Dick Cheney at all, and I'm not sure it does. You can give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We've got Katrina Vandenhoevel from The Nation's Magazine is going to be with us at the bottom of this hour, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. I don't know of anybody in the liberal side of things, on the liberal side of things, who's any more well-spoken than Katrina is. Most certainly, I always enjoy speaking to her. I had a chance to talk to her at the Take Back America conference recently in Washington. And she's going to be on the show today for a few minutes. So looking forward to that. Had a little time over the weekend to actually sit down and watch a movie. And it was really apropos to things that are going on now. This New York Times controversy isn't going to go away. And frankly, I hope it doesn't. I hope this administration continues their attack on the Times in the same relentless manner they're doing right now. The longer it continues, the more enlightened American public just might become anyway. It may take a while, maybe longer for some than others, but eventually the public will see through this creepy little veil of threats and propaganda being put up by the Bush administration. I think in my adult lifetime, this is probably the worst, most blatant attack on American freedoms that I've witnessed. We're going to talk about that a little bit with Katrina Vandenhoevel at the bottom of the hour. I was just a kid when the McCarthy witch hunt took place, and I've studied it, and it was a very, very sad chapter in American history. Ruined a lot of people. It involved a man who was a master of propaganda, spreading fear amongst the populace for quite a long time with the full cooperation of most of the media. He had the American people thinking the carryout boy at the local grocery store was a commie pinko. He really did. Commies under every rock. Anyone who disagreed with McCarthy was threatened with being exposed as a commie. And there wasn't a dirtier word in the world than commie back when McCarthy was doing this, and he knew it. And most people absolutely cowered from his malicious accusations, and in many cases they lost their livelihood, their careers, their reputation, their good names, and their personal security that the Constitution of the United States is supposed to protect. McCarthy was convicting people without a trial, without their being able to face their accusers in many cases, many even without knowing what was charged against them and by whom. You know, you'd ask him, oh, it's a secret, I can't let that out. Really, that's the way he did things. Sound familiar? There was a cloud of fear over the entertainment industry and the media that I don't think they've ever really recovered from. They've always got a little bit gun-shy because of that. And really, there wasn't anyone who was safe from the absolutely insane rants of Joe McCarthy. But people finally started to stand up against him. They finally summoned the courage to look him in the eye and tell him he wasn't fit to hold office, let alone be the prosecutor, judge, and jury against people whose only crime was to be a citizen of this country and say or do something McCarthy didn't approve of. The sad thing is that this evil man convinced so many Americans that he was sort of a holy crusade to save the country from an invasion of communists who were hell-bent upon taking over our country. And really, when you look at the whole thing, it was a totally unfounded assumption, but a lot of people took up his cause, and they helped spread this paranoia across the country. And for my money, Joseph McCarthy was an extremely evil, unbalanced man who also suffered from being a hopeless alcoholic, and that's not a good combination. That there are people in our country today that still believe in the validity of McCarthy's cause is really disturbing to me. People like Ann Coulter, for example, I've seen her admit that McCarthy is one of her personal heroes. That disgusts me. But she's admitted that, and why not? She's doing the same thing he did. I also believe she may be just as mentally unbalanced as was McCarthy. But nonetheless, she's been able to coerce the media into buying into her almost insane rants against anyone not following her doctrine of right-wing extremism. And make no mistake about it, she is an extremist of the highest order. Anyone not agreeing with her points of view on political matters are considered godless traitors, ergo her new book. You know, Coulter, like her personal hero, Joseph McCarthy, is a very, very dangerous person. She's been able to push her way into the mainstream media, get herself massive exposure for her propagandist books and ideas, and like McCarthy, and you can see it on her face, she's delusional, and she acts like a total madwoman at times. But she has credibility with right-wingers, you see. But Coulter isn't the story here. The real story is the almost unbelievable similarity of the McCarthy era and what's taken place this very moment during the Bush administration. And over the weekend, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about this today, over the weekend I've viewed that movie, Good Night and Good Luck, which is a very, very accurate portrayal of this evil bastard McCarthy and of someone I consider to be a true American hero as well, Edward R. Murrow. The similarity of the two eras then and now is absolutely, to me, is just eerie. The only thing is, now there are many McCarthys and no Murrows. And if you disagree with me on that point, please tell me who the present-day Edward R. Murrow is. I don't see any with the national prominence and power that he had to challenge the right on this witch hunt named at the New York Times. I don't see anybody with that kind of power on the left. The extreme right is pounding away relentlessly against the Times and is even having other news organizations join them in the assault against one of America's great newspapers is the New York Times. Fox News is calling for a censorship board to censor the news. And that's something that just a few years ago Americans would have considered absolutely unthinkable. And, of course, the pundits from the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Times are joining the attack. The sad fact is that millions of Americans are listening to the right-wing extremist propaganda and accepting it as truth. That the Times is guilty of treason for writing a story about something that any of us who would pay any attention at all to world events already knew to be true. That the American government's been keeping track of the financial transactions of terrorist organizations. Oh, wow, what a secret that was. Was this some kind of startling news to anybody? I knew it, and I have known it since Bush himself bragged about it some 4 or 5 years ago. And it's been revealed by several U.S. government officials during that time. They openly bragged about it. There can't be anyone with any knowledge at all of current events that didn't know that we've been doing that. Most certainly the terrorists have known about it for some time now. But the Times writes a story about the subject and are labeled as traitors by the Bush administration and their minions. It's the theater of the absurd. A bunch of known leakers, the Bush people, who leak some secret information that we didn't know, accusing the New York Times of leaking something we all did know. I don't know when I've heard a more ridiculous charge. But nonetheless, they've gained some traction with the story, and it's sticking with the public. And it's apparent that this is nothing more than a blatant attempt to stifle the media, to intimidate them into silence and only report what the Bush administration wants them to report. You know, they might as well send out a memo to all the news organizations. And it ought to say something like, here's the news we've approved. Now be good little boys and girls and report it the way we want it told, or else. And if you stray from the script we provided you with, you're going to be tried for treason and exposed to the American public as traitors. You see, freedom of the press doesn't matter anymore. Not unless we say it's okay. It's got to be our version of freedom of the press. That's what they're saying. If you haven't seen this gradual erosion of your rights disappearing around you, then you haven't been paying attention. Are telephone conversations being monitored? Our banking records are no longer private. The famous, quote, free speech zones being used to keep protesters away from Bush and company. And their amazing feat of starting a war in a pack of absolutely proven lies is something no one could have foreseen just a few short years ago. They may not have created the fear over 9/11. They might not have actually created that fear. But they sure as hell have exploited it for political advantage at every possible opportunity. I consider their actions pertaining to the Bush War and the Bush occupation of Iraq to be the most egregious act by any presidential administration in our nation's history. And their rationalization for their actions in Iraq is, by any measure you want to use, totally absurd. The new phrase, Operation Iraqi Freedom. That phrase is to any thinking person absolutely empty and hollow. We cannot defend freedom abroad by destroying it at home. You can stand on the street corners of your neighborhoods and wave your American flags. You can drive around with those little plastic ribbons that say support our troops on your cars. You can go to church every Sunday and sing God Bless America and the Battle Hymn of the Republic. But if you support what Bush is doing with his foreign policy, then at the very least you're misinformed and misguided, and at worst you're hopelessly out of touch with reality. As I watched that movie the other night, Good Night and Good Luck, I was thinking that I really don't believe that in any time in our history have we been in more need of a man like Edward R. Murrow stepping forward to challenge the Bush political machine to a debate on the issues. I may not have the abilities nor the eloquence of Murrow, but I sure have the willingness to do it. I just wish I had the platform, the big old platform from which to do what's needed to defeat these scoundrels by using the greatest weapon of all on them, the truth. What I wouldn't give to be on a stage with the likes of Limbaugh and Karl Rove and Hannity and Ann Coulter. They've all been invited on this show numerous times. None has ever accepted, and none of them ever will. Because as one of my very favorite actors would say, they can't handle the truth. They can't. I saw Ann Coulter the other night accosted by, who was it, Jonathan Alter, perhaps, on one of the talk shows. And she was rambling on and on and on in the crazed manner in which she goes. And Alter interrupted her and said, Ann, wasn't it you who said the only mistake Timothy McVeigh made was not bombing the New York Times offices? And she said, are you going to keep interrupting me? He said, no, I want to ask you the question. She says, don't interrupt me. I'm talking. He said, Ann, I asked the question. Didn't you say that Tim McVeigh made a mistake by not bombing the New York Times office? And she wouldn't answer that. Of all the things she said and all the things she said over and over again, I'm proud and I would say it again, she wouldn't repeat that one. Not on national TV. Just kept up with that bitchy tone of hers. Says, are you going to keep interrupting me? Are you going to let me talk? Man. Anyway, it was interesting. Interesting to see what that woman had to say. I've had enough of her now. I don't think I'll watch any more of her interviews. I tend to get this nasty feeling in the pit of my stomach every time I do. And I want to thank a lot of you for sending some really great research information in. I received quite a few really great things, emails this particularly long weekend. I did want to mention, and by the way, I've got another letter from one of our soldiers today that I'm going to read probably in the second half hour of the program if we have time during that segment. But another letter from one of our soldiers stationed in Iraq at the moment. What he has to say may or may not surprise you. I don't know. Depends where you sit on this issue. But they offered, they opened up a new coffee shop down the road from where I live. And as I've told you many times before, there are many, many people here in the area where I live from abroad, from all around the world, actually. Got to visit a little bit over the weekend with one of my very favorite couples and one of the most interesting couples I think I've ever talked to. She is from Tokyo. She's very Japanese. He's from Great Britain. They met in Paris, and they're married, and they speak French. He doesn't speak Japanese. She doesn't speak English, but they both spoke French, and it's an amazing deal to watch. I don't know why I bring it up, but it fascinates me, and they're such a lovely couple. They really are. But many people like that here in this area. They have second homes here, and that's what they do here. They come here and stay for a couple of months when they get time off from their jobs. In his case, a job with a oil company. Exploration, I might add. So I do get a lot of good inside tips from him about what's going on in the field of energy exploration all around the world. But this morning I had coffee with a very nice couple from Denmark. And they live here a few months each year. They own a home here, and they'll be visiting us for about another 60 days or so. And I'm pretty sure they're probably listening right now and will be surprised that I'm going to talk about them today. But I felt their comments were of particular importance today of all days. We were having a nice conversation about our local area here, and of course my curiosity, and those of you that know me, I can't stand it, my curiosity about their political views got the best of me, and I had to ask the question I usually ask visitors from other countries, and I asked them their overall opinion of the American government. And as it so often is, I had to coax them a little bit to get them to admit their thoughts, because as I've discovered during these past couple of years, Europeans are sometimes very reluctant to share their views with us because they're afraid they'll run into one of these very unpleasant right-wingers who speak so condescendingly towards them, which is often the case. But the folks I met this morning, Jorgen and Nella, finally opened up and answered my questions in a very honest and forthright manner, and I asked them what they thought of the Iraq occupation. They think it was a big mistake from the very beginning, and since no WMDs were found, that the whole thing is quite immoral. That our presence there is immoral. That every day we spend there is immoral. So, since the newspaper was there with Kim Jong-il's little escapade from yesterday on the front page, I asked him what they thought about that. When asking him about that particular subject, I related that I felt Kim Jong-il's a dangerous man, and according to many sources, a little bit unbalanced, or at least a little bit weird. And Jorgen looked me in the eye and said to me, "Guy, no matter how unbalanced and dangerous you think Kim Jong-il is, I want to let you know that most people I know in Europe think he is no threat at all compared to your President Bush, who has shown he doesn't mind starting wars, and then telling him God told him to do it. That's more than a little crazy," said this gentleman from Denmark. And I have to admit, that caused me to blink and swallow hard, hearing that the President of the United States is being held up as being far more dangerous to the world than the likes of Kim Jong-il is not an easy thing for an American to hear. I don't care who you are. That's not an easy thing to hear. I mean, after all, you all know how I've excoriated and chastised Bush on this program, and I stand by every word, but when someone from another country tells you that Bush is more dangerous than Kim Jong-il, it kind of throws you back on your heels a little bit. I'm afraid George Bush has done far more damage to our credibility as a nation than I'd first thought. I've heard several very damning remarks from foreigners about Bush, but I've never heard one of them say something quite so, for lack of a better word, so in your face about him that made me want to hang my head in shame. Man, oh man. To be a resident of what I consider to be the greatest nation on earth and know that people around the world are looking at the president and they think him think of him as more dangerous and deranged than Kim Jong-il is just a little bit hard to take. Well, I asked Jorgen and his wife what was the feeling about the American people in Europe right now. And out comes another answer that blew me away. He said, I think the American people are being looked upon as quite willing to support Bush. And for that reason, Europe has a quite different view of America than it did just a few years ago. And I made up my mind right then and there, after I finished my coffee, that I think I'm going to stop asking people from other countries their thoughts about the United States for a while at least. Because I can't stand to hear things like that. I mean, on the one hand, it doubles my resolve to try and make things better. But on the other hand, that just flies in the face of everything I've thought of my entire life, the way we've all been brought up to feel about this country. And to have a president that is compared to Kim Jong-il in a way like that it's more than a little bit troubling to me. And I know a lot of you are probably saying, well, what did you expect? Well, I had hoped they might have just said, well, this war is wrong, we don't agree with you. And I would be able to answer back, well, I agree with you, I think it's wrong too, and it always was. But please, people from other countries, please understand that this is not the American people talking. This is our government talking. This is our government doing this. But when they look you square in the eye and say, no, 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 no. You knew what this man was. Your media told you what this man was. Your media told you what this man would do. And especially, you knew what he would do when you reelected him. They have a point, don't they? They do have a point. And don't fall into the trap that so many of these right-wingers like to use on people. Oh, they're just jealous. We're the most powerful, richest nation on earth, and they're so damn jealous of us, they just can't stand it. And that's why they say stuff like that, because they don't like America, because we're just so damn great. That's not it at all. I've met hundreds, perhaps thousands of people over the years where I live who have been visitors from abroad who have said how wonderful they think America is and how lucky that we are to live here. And although that they love their own countries, you could always tell, yeah, they had a little envy. They had a little envy, but you know what? That's all gone now. Bush and his people have helped erase all that. And it's a rotten shame. And we've stood by and watched it happen. And we've let it happen because we didn't say enough to stop it. We didn't put forth the effort to stop it. We haven't done enough. And so you say, well, what could we have done? We could have done more. We could have, and we should have done more. We should have hit the streets. We should have marched on Washington. A lot of things we could have done. We could have been more adamant with our Democratic politicians who have barely uttered a whimper throughout this whole Bush mess. And you will admit, I'm sure, that our Democratic politicians have barely uttered a whimper throughout this whole sordid mess. But have we come down on them? Not nearly hard enough. Not nearly hard enough. Hell, I hear people defending Joe Lieberman. Come on. That's one thing we can do right there to help change it. Well, anyway, we got time for a break coming up here in just a moment. I think that's what we'll do right now. We'll pause for a break just for a minute or two. And when we come back, everything works okay with the phone company, we'll have Katrina Vandenhoeven with us. Thank you.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
And welcome back to the program. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And as I mentioned before we went to break, I promised you that we'd have one of the very best spokesmen on this afternoon, and we do. It's my great honor and pleasure to have Katrina Vandenhoeve with us from The Nation's Magazine. Katrina, are you with us?
I am here. Thank you.
Well, you're in New York today?
I am in New York City, having watched the grand fireworks display last night over the East River.
I watched a little of that myself. It was good. It was good, but far better in person, I'm sure. I think we need a few things like that to kind of bolster us a little bit nowadays.
I think almost as exciting as the fireworks, though a little too close for satisfaction, was the Supreme Court's decision on the eve of the July 4th weekend. Your listeners may have followed it to some extent, but the case of Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. I think one hopes it marks the beginning of the end of an executive branch run amok at the expense of the co-equal legislative and judicial branches. And it seems like it's finally a check of some sort on this unchecked executive power, which, of course, you know, the Fourth Estate, the media, needs to play a role in as well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's one of the things I wanted to ask you about. Do you think Bush will find a way to do an end run around the Supreme Court somehow?
I do. I mean, I think in light of, some of the key legal people inside this administration, people who've been in the shadows but we're learning more about, like David Addington, Vice President Cheney's chief of staff, longtime principal legal advisor, I mean, they have used the so-called war on terror to provide political cover for overturning essentially two centuries of jurisprudence defining the limits of the executive branch. And that seems to me these people, Addington, John Yoo, who was also one of the architects of the torture memos, it's going to be tough for people like this to step back and see their, quote, handiwork undone by things like what Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez has termed quaint, meaning the Geneva Convention, something this country has lived with in dignity and grace for decades. So I do think you'll see an executive branch attempt to kind of wrestle with the Congress. There are a few Republicans who are speaking out saying we do need to have judicial process, due process, some return of power of oversight to the Congress, which has essentially abdicated it. But it may well be that there'll be a showdown between the executive branch and Congress over some of these essential issues.
Well, with these 750 signing statements and so forth, it's been very clear that almost from the very beginning that Bush has decided, maybe not Bush, but whoever's running the show, probably Cheney, has decided to consolidate all the power they could and the Constitution be damned. And I think, as far as I know, the only thing in the oath of office that the President of the United States promises to protect is the Constitution of the United States.
And that is under clear and established danger. And, as I wrote over the July 4th weekend, it's clear to those who pay just a little attention that our Constitution is in grave danger. And we've seen it threatened. We've seen a clear violation of established law and centuries-old political precedent, whether it's the wiretapping of American citizens, or imprisoning citizens without warrants, or the signing statements you've mentioned. Now, other presidents have used those very sparingly, but in this case, we're talking about 750. So I think there's an abuse and overreach of presidential power that is so brazen, that so directly challenges our constitutional design, that a fairly compliant Congress, as we've seen in these last few years, is finally waking up. Now, the danger is that another element of oversight in our democracy, as it is configured, is a media, a watchdog media media that operates in the public interest. In the run-up to war, and I'm sure you've talked a lot about this on the show, we saw too much of the media was timid and deferential and abdicated too much of its reason for existence, which is to inform citizens, particularly during times of great national interest. Now, we're seeing a media wake up. Some of the important stories of these last months, the exposure of a lawless, warrantless wiretapping program, the exposure of CIA black sites of torture around this country, around the world, one by the New York Times, one by the Washington Post. Neither of these papers, to be honest, great watchdog newspapers in the run-up to war. So I would argue that the attacks that so many of your listeners have heard on the New York Times, in particular in these last days, really are part of an undeclared war on the media, which this administration has sort of put into place, the template of it over these last years, again, with the design to delegitimize the media so that it doesn't play a role as a kind of checks and balance on an executive run amok.
Well, what's different right now? You know, I looked at this New York Times thing, and to me, it's silly. I mean, the argument from the Republicans and from the administration is absolutely silly.
No, this money monitoring program plays no – I mean, it bears no resemblance to sort of real security breaches like disclosure of troop locations.
Well, didn't we all know about it?
Yeah. No, I agree. But see, here's the thing. What I think – first of all, I think this – first of all, not to be I think this is just common sense, but let me just lay out what I think's happened here. I think Karl Rove, no longer under indictment, emerges. He was under the threat of indictment, when the New York Times did a far more important story at the end of last year, which was the exposure of the warrantless wiretapping story, right? This story, the money monitoring, as you said, you know, it's silly. The Secretary of the Treasury has been boasting about this program. He took journalists on a trip around the world to tell them about this great money monitoring program. The administration says it was worried bankers would no longer comply. Please, many of them are under subpoena to comply with this. And the administration had long talks with the New York Times. New York Times is not a lefty organ. It's ridiculous. It's an establishment, respectable institution, which had many days and hours of conversation with administration officials. I think Rove has used this story, again, to come out and attack, delegitimize the media, because that's been part of the game plan over the last years. He's back in business. It's a campaign tool, and it's really quite scandalous and disgraceful that they are using media bashing as a political tool to the detriment of any sense of the Constitution and its values or a free press. But what's new? I mean, remember Swift voting? I mean, that too was part of abuse of kind of truth. And again, too much of the media went along with that and gave that way too much hype in the run-up to the 2004 election, instead of some of the core issues which it should have been grappling with, like misuse of intelligence and other factors.
Well, I think it also shows to me a basic lack of respect, if you will, for the electorate. Do they know the people are this uninformed, or do they think they're stupid? Which is it?
I do think it goes back to the fear factor, Guy. I think you've seen an administration willing to frighten people and to use the war card. I would argue that this, quote, war on terror is really a long struggle which our country will be involved with for decades. You're not at war against terror, but by scaring people, it allows an administration to have an excessive reliance on secrecy, and it allows people to say, well, I'm going to give up my rights or some of my rights for security. But that balance between liberty and security is a very difficult one. But there is no question that it is wildly off balance now because of the reckless contempt for the Constitution, for our Bill of Rights, and for the media displayed by this administration.
What do you say? What do you say to the people on the right? I've seen you on many of the shows lately.
For better or worse, though.
And I do enjoy it when you're going to be on and try and get those. What do you say when they say, "Well, you're not giving up your freedoms; you're just giving up a little of your privacy"?
I think that it's a slippery slope, and I think this country citizens have already given up a good amount of privacy. What I would also go back to, though, I have to go back to the fact that too often, the use of national security as a kind of cloak for taking away people's privacy is really more about allowing people in office to cover up their backsides. I mean, the assault on a free press or the assault on privacy rights is kind of a desperate ploy by too many officials, as we learn, as there are revelations and stories and exposure, trying to hide their own lethal mistakes in the shadows. So I think exposure, transparency, information is the oxygen of democracy. Of course, there is a balance, but we've lost that balance. And we can't live in a kind of national security state. That is not what America is about. Let's not forget that we are in this fight to uphold and affirm and strengthen the very values we claim this country's all about. But in the process, we're giving them away.
Right.
So what happens at the end of the day?
Yeah, I was just telling the listeners a while ago, I finally got a chance to see that Good Night and Good Luck movie over the weekend with Merle, where he said we can't defend democracies or freedom abroad by giving it up at home.
That's right. I mean, we need some democracy exporting here. And it's not that, you know, listen, the other thing, guys, I get, you know, this magazine, The Nation, or I get called America haters. We love America. We want it to fulfill the potential it was founded for, of, by. But at the moment, you know, what's so sad also is the view of America in the world. I mean, that is going to take decades to repair. Now, you know, we can be a force of hope and not fear. And there are strong democratic values that this country can share. But at the moment, they're under assault. And when I read a story in the newspapers I did today, I think, about China, it's going to censor some of its media, you wonder, you know, what right do we have to talk about media freedoms when the House, the Republicans in the House of Representatives just last week passed a resolution condemning the New York Times?
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's like any member of the House who voted for that resolution is going to earn a place in history alongside the sponsors of the Alien and Sedition Acts and other assaults on basic freedoms. It's very hard for Americans who love their country to see what's happening to it. But I think more and more are waking up. The polls showing so many Americans feel the country's heading in the wrong direction is kind of the tip of the iceberg of what people are feeling but not expressing. And, of course, much of that has to do with what they feel in their own pocketbooks, gas prices, or kids who can't afford to go to college. But it's also about sort of a sense of what are we doing in places like Iraq?
Well,
what happened with Hurricane Katrina? Why is there such a kind of lethal incompetence?
Well, one of those people leading the charge on the New York Times is somebody very close to where you are, Mr. Peter King, Representative King. He was really frothing at the mouth over the whole thing. I was amazed.
I was amazed that so many of the, you know, I was amazed at some of the vitriolic, over-the-top language used by right-wingers in the blogosphere. I mean, talking about treason, I think one of them called for execution. I mean, it was just
yes.
off the wall. I mean, you have to wonder how much, at some point, and this is what I was trying to express in my editor's cut column of the 4th of July weekend. This is not an issue, by the way, left-right. This is an issue of constitutional principle. We're running in our next issue a short piece by a former Republican congressman from Oklahoma named Mickey Edwards,
mm-hmm.
who is a member of the American Bar Association's bipartisan commission investigating Bush's 750 signing orders and whether this is a violation of constitutional order and whether this is an example of executive lawlessness. This is not a left-right issue. This is an issue about what kind of country we will be. You know, I often think you mentioned the Murrow movie. There was a great experiment in the McCarthy era when two political scientists took the Bill of Rights into a public square, I believe it was in Wisconsin, and asked people to sign. And so many Americans frightened in those years would not sign because they thought it was too radical a document. I really believe if one took, for example, the Declaration of Independence, the preamble to it, which I reread over the weekend, I guarantee you a lot of Congress people would be frightened of such a radical document. But we must renew our commitment to those founding principles.
think you are so right. Are we at least lucky that this assault on the Constitution is taking place in an election year? Will the Republicans, the hardcore right-wingers, back off of this because of being election year?
I think if this issue is posed clearly to the American people, you know, do you want to be secure under law, or do you want to be secure in a lawless country or under a lawless administration? If it's posed clearly by members of both parties, but I fear that the Republicans in Congress, for the most part, have been complicit and accomplices of a rollback of constitutional order and rights. I do think it's up to the Democratic Party and its candidates to speak very clearly about how Americans can be secure under law and be defenders of the Constitution over those who would destroy it. I have faith that Americans do want to live in that way, but fear is a very demobilizing, dangerous factor.
Well, I have that faith as well, and the only thing that worries me about all this is the media, and I harp on this all the time, doing what I do, and I know you do because of what you do. I always see this, and I like to give an analogy of we're in a great big football stadium, and they have control of the public address system, and we have a little megaphone down on the sideline.
That's so well put. The Swift Boat example is an example of on the eve of a crucial election, when there were issues of peace and war and life and death, but the media, so many millions, 80% of Americans, I think, get their news from television. So much of the television media abetted that Swift Boat campaign. As you said, there is a small megaphone, which we're part of. And just like John Edwards, who is running for president, talks about two Americas, there are three, four, five, six media in this country, right? I mean, but the dominant media is often a lapdog and not a watchdog. So you're right that one has to factor in what they will do, that media, because at the end of the day, I believe Americans are decent people who want to do best by their country, but they don't have time in many cases to get all the news they need.
Well, they don't have time, and another thing, I know I spoke to you at the Take Back
yes.
America conference here, maybe 3 weeks ago, something
That's
like
right.
that. And I noticed that during that whole conference, and it was great. It was great for everybody to get together and talk, exchange ideas and so forth. But there wasn't a serious effort put forth there or any place I go for any of these on let's get a big media presence. It just seems like the left, there's just little bit of hammering going on around, but not this billions of dollars that were thrown at it
right.
by the right.
Well, I do think that there's an effort underway to build a kind of alternative infrastructure, a media infrastructure, but it's slow. And all of our work on the internet, all of the work on radio programs like yours, magazines like The Nation, it's building, but it's not the megaphone, the big megaphone it needs to be. However, I do think there is an effort now to sort of counter the television right-wing noise machine, plans afoot to buy up different stations and piece together a new kind of public address system, as you put it so well. I'm happy that there's finally some attention, I have to be honest, Guy. I mean, I've been going to that conference, Take Back America, for a few years. It's a good conference. But the first year or so, there was very little attention paid to the media at all.
Mm-hmm.
But at least now there's an understanding that some of the key fights ahead of us, for example, about net neutrality and the internet and not letting some of the big corporations colonize the internet, or what's happening with consolidation, or how we build alternative means of distribution like Robert Greenwald, a good filmmaker, has done with his film documentary about Fox Television, or what he's doing for the fall, which all of your listeners should know about, on war profiteering. And Halliburton and other big corporations, he's going to labor halls, he's going to churches, he's going to basically like Tupperware parties with his film, using Move On to get the word out to millions of people. So there are alternatives, but we still have to contest on that big football field.
Katrina, it's been a great pleasure to have you along with us today.
Thank you so much. You're so
well-spoken on the issues, and I do appreciate you taking time
Thank
to be on
you.
The Guy James Show. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Yeah, bye now.
Thanks.
Katrina Vandenhoevel of the Nation's Magazine, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in person, is most certainly, and one of those rare people that, believe me, when she gets against the right-wing talking heads on TV, and many of you know this, she's capable of taking their heads off, and does with good speech and logic, and she's terrific. She really is, and I really enjoyed having her on the program. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kit, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg, we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice. The Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Tim Robbins. Recently in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans in high levels of government, the military, and intelligence have risked their careers, their livelihoods, and in some cases their safety to bring information to light to expose the lies, duplicity, and potential crimes of the Bush administration. These patriotic Americans are trying to tell us something. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an official investigation into the Bush administration.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Ah, yes. Welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show. Crusader for the left. Yeah, that's what we're out here doing. We're trying to establish a good media presence on the left instead of getting beaten over the head. I think my old analogy, and I first used that about 3 or 4 years ago on the program, we do have this little megaphone on the sideline of the big football stadium while they have the control of the public address system. I think it's just that unfair. I really it is. I really think it is. You know, speaking to Katrina Vandenhoevel, somebody wrote me an answer to her blog, and by the way, you can take a look at that on thenations.com, nations.com. Someone says, oh, no, our Constitution isn't under attack. It's not in danger at all. The country is in danger, though. It's in danger. What do you say? It's in danger by the foreign cultures that are trying to come in. Oh, yeah, tell the Irish and the Catholics and the Germans and the Greeks all that. Oh, man. Let's see. The Soviet Union and the scoundrels, these scoundrels, meaning the left, have found a second career, this time free of the communist stigma, but still slandering the U.S. as a bellicose giant greedy to topple the liberties of the weak and poor, and not just in the third world, but here at home. Oh, my, my, my. He goes on to say they oppose the effort to eject Saddam Hussein. They hoped his forces would defeat America, and they yet seek the victory of Iraqi insurgency, even as it mass murders and machine guns voters. They detest the United States as much today as during the Cold War. They despise her for being capitalist and wealthy and successful. All the more, does this sound like Rush Limbaugh talking or what? Rush, you're not kidding me. You must have written this. You must have written. And he goes on to say, Vandenhoevel is typical of this rottenness. True ideologue. Tell you what. This had to be written by... And the amazing part about this is, oh, we didn't want to capture Saddam. We didn't want to do this and want to do that. Guess who it was over the weekend that abandoned the hunt? Now we find out abandoned the hunt for Osama bin Laden. That's right. We find out that the CIA organization that was supposed to go out and hunt bin Laden that's been disbanded? Are you kidding? Stay the course? Man, if there was ever a group of people that talked out of both sides of their mouth, I don't know who would do a better job of it, Bush or... Oh, my God. These guys are a treat. And, of course, we're going to talk about that when we come back from news at the top of the hour. And don't forget, I've got a letter from one of our soldiers over there. We've heard from him before, and he wrote us again, and I think you will find it interesting. And also, I want to talk a little bit briefly about what would it be like for the framers of the Constitution to come back today and see what's... Oh, yeah, they'd be amazed by the iPods and the computers and automobiles and all the great technological advances that have taken place. But what would they think of our government right now? I do want to talk about that in the second hour of the program today. And you can give us a call then, 866-546-5254. It's not just my opinion that matters on this. Yours matters as well, and I hope you'll let us know what your opinion is. Do you think this was a big threat by Kim Jong-il yesterday, firing off these missiles, or was this just a little crybaby over in the corner going, hey, look at me, I got some missiles too? I don't know. It doesn't seem as though it was any kind of a serious effort. And, of course, we have always got Star Wars out there, right? So I feel very safe. Of course, I'm a lot farther away from North Korea than is the people on the west coast of the United States, but it doesn't sound to me like they have anything capable of getting there. And if it does, let me ask you this question. All of the, you know, it's well known that many people on the left are complete doves and don't believe in war of any kind. I'm not quite in that corner. If you knew that Kim Jong-il had one of those rockets sitting on the launch pad over there that had a nuclear weapon sitting on the top of it, and a true ICBM that could reach Alaska or reach the west coast of the United States, would the United States, just knowing it was sitting there, would the United States be justified in blowing it all to hell and back before they even had a chance to ever set it off? What do you think? I would love to hear from you on that subject. Do you think a preemptive strike in that case would be the thing to do? Do you think Kim Jong-il is a bona fide threat to the security of the people of the United States? I don't know. I don't know if he is or not. I'm not comfortable with the fact that this man has possibilities of using ICBMs. I'm not comfortable at all with that fact. And I was asked the question, what do you think? Would you blow his rocket up with a nuclear weapon on, sitting on top of it up on the launch pad if you knew he had it sitting there? Would you? I don't know. That's a tough one. 866-546-5254. If you've got an answer to that one, I'd like to hear it. We've got a lot to talk about in the second hour, and I do hope you will join us. I enjoy hearing your views on all these things. We're going to talk a little bit about Catherine Harris, our beloved Republican congresswoman from up around Tampa. I don't know, Tampa and where else? Bradenton, Sarasota, Florida. I don't know what all group she's in up there, but up in that area, our very beloved congresswoman, Catherine Harris. So do hang on. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back with you after the news at the top of the hour. And again, we hope you'll join us at 866-546-5254. If you just want to call us and let us know what you had for lunch yesterday, why, that's okay, too. Love to hear about these big 4th of July barbecues. Anyway, we'll be back after the news. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
This is the Quality News Network. The United Nations Security Council is meeting in emergency session this afternoon to consider a resolution proposed by Japan, the U.S., and Britain condemning North Korea's test launch of 7 missiles yesterday. Japan is calling for swift, strong action, and U.N. Ambassador John Bolton says there is unprecedented international unity on the issue. Astronauts aboard the Space Shuttle Discovery are spending their first full day in space inspecting their orbiter for possible damage from pieces of foam which were seen flying off the fuel tank after yesterday's launch. New Jersey still has no state budget, so with no state regulators available, its casinos are forced to close today for the first time ever. The casino hotels are still open, but the gambling is shut down along with state parks and beaches. Meanwhile, state lawmakers are still trying to reach an agreement on a new spending plan. Enron founder and CEO Kenneth Lay has died in Aspen, Colorado, reportedly from a massive heart attack. Lay, who had been convicted on multiple counts of conspiracy and fraud, was due to be sentenced in October. He was 64. Israel is now increasing its offensive in the Gaza Strip, sending troops into residential areas to try and create a buffer zone to prevent militants from firing any rockets, and also to try and find the Israeli soldier kidnapped 10 days ago. But the Israeli government insists it has no plans to reoccupy Gaza. Talks that were scheduled today between the European Union and Iran about its nuclear program have been postponed for at least a day, no reason given by Tehran. Iraq's prime minister wants an independent investigation into the alleged rape and murder of a young Iraqi woman and the killing of her family by U.S. soldiers in March. He also wants a review of foreign troops' immunity from Iraqi law. One former GI has been charged in the rape and murders, and other soldiers may be as well. In Afghanistan, two rush hour bombings in Kabul today have killed one person and injured dozens. Italian prosecutors have issued warrants and want the extradition of four Americans, three of them CIA agents, for their alleged role in the kidnapping of a radical Egyptian cleric in Milan 3 years ago. Two officials of the Italian Secret Service were arrested today in connection with that case. In Mexico, where Sunday's presidential election is still considered too close to call, an official review of the voting is now underway, a process that could take days. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin says his city is recovering and is ahead of schedule on rebuilding. He adds that 225,000 people are back. He expects that number to grow to 300,000 by summer. The end of the summer, I should say. New Orleans' population before Katrina was 484,000. This is the Quality News Network. We'll have an update on business news and Wall Street coming up.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Online retailer Amazon.com has announced the opening of its new toy and baby stores after severing its contract with ToysRUs.com. McDonald's is changing its packaging in Russia to show customers how many calories there are in Big Macs and Quarter Pounders and other foods on its menu. The nation's factory orders were up for the month of May, rebounding from its big drop the month before. New orders rose 0.07%, something Commerce Department analysts are attributing to a strong demand for chemicals and petroleum. Weekly retail sales for the week ending July 1st rose 2.9% compared to a year ago and are expected to rise for the month between 2.5% and 3%. General Motors is looking at the possibility of a three-way alliance with Renault and Nissan, one suggested last week by GM's largest shareholder, Kurt Kerkorian. The boards of both Renault and Nissan have endorsed the idea of talking about it, and now word comes that GM's CEO plans to meet with his counterpart from the two companies later this month. Britain's BAE Systems has ordered an audit of Airbus, pushing it back its possible sale of a 20% stake in the company to September at the earliest. Meanwhile, Airbus is expected to concede today that after 5 years, it's lost its number one position on aircraft orders to Boeing. A light sweet oil is trading at $75.20 this hour. That's up $1.27 and just 5 cents short of an all-time record. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrial is down 73, NASDAQ is down 38, and the S&P 500 is down 10. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
God bless America. If you only think we have prepared.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, so glad to be with you on this Wednesday afternoon, right after the 4th of July. Hope you all had a great holiday weekend. I kind of caught up on a lot of work that's been piling up. And got caught up on a lot of it anyway, so that's a good thing. That's one of those things that causes me to lose sleep at night when I'm hopelessly behind on my work. But did get caught up a little bit on a few things. Hey, you can give us a call here at the Guy James Show and throw in your 2 cents worth, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Pamela from Montana.
Well, hi. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And your question before the news break, I have been thinking about this all through the 4th of July night, and I'm afraid my first reaction to everything I hear now is suspicion of something else going on.
Well, I wonder why.
And, you know, I don't believe that their long-distance missile failed. I think they tossed it up there, and it was meant to not go all the way, and I just don't believe that the Asian mind would put up a missile that failed. I just don't. And I just, you know, I don't know what the plot is, but like I remember I wrote you an email once about having to go see Syriana, and the reason is because that movie broadens the game that these people are playing to such a terrifying level.
Mm-hmm.
The stakes are all so high. And I can see everybody playing games. You know, we owe China our country. China wants South Korea.
Right.
Give South Korea to China if they'll take care of Korea. You know, who knows what's really going on?
Oh, indeed, who knows? That's a valid question.
This crap. You know, we don't know what, you know, Ken Lay's dead, is he?
Yeah, I know.
He's got the most benign baby white man face in the world.
Yeah.
He could get lost anywhere.
That's right. That's right.
Just like Bin Laden's probably sitting in a gentleman's club in London.
Boy, now that's the first time I've heard it quite described that way, the most benign baby face. And
he does.
Yeah,
he's
you're right.
Off the Gerber baby food bottle,
yeah.
You know?
64 years old. And you're right. You know, what is going on? And I agree with you. As long as they've been working on their rockets over there, I mean, albeit that we failed many times before we actually got one up in the air many years ago with Wernher von Braun ahead of that project. We still have to take them seriously, but who knows? And I'm with you. It's hard to believe anything that comes out of the Pentagon anymore or the White House.
Or the press. Whatever is allowed to get through. You got to question it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So I don't know. And as far as retaliating, you know, we didn't retaliate about the World Trade Center. Nobody got in the sky then.
No.
I think if a bomb hits San Francisco, you know, where all the gays are, that and Democrats, that it's going to that we're going to like be blowing Korea off the map.
Well, Bill O'Reilly would side with him on that, isn't that what
he
said?
Well, yeah. I hope he remember Dr. Strangelove. I hope he's riding it down.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of that movie. Yee-hoo!
Me too. And look who was sitting there.
That was old Andy Devine on that baby riding it down with her.
No,
yeah,
Texas cowboy, nevertheless.
Yes. So, how are things in Montana today?
Well, we're getting a little bit of rain, thank the gods. And
all right.
Yesterday was a spectacular, wonderful, small town, great parade with, you know, my son doing his Boy Scout thing. And
yeah.
Everybody knows everybody. It's, you know, Montana's great.
Well,
it
is.
Thank God it's not red.
Yeah.
Just another myth. Unfortunately, the Republicans have done their job here, though, because people truly believe that the government is their enemy. They believe that it doesn't matter if they vote.
I think on some of the states, I think Montana and maybe Idaho and maybe maybe Wyoming this year. I'm not going to throw Utah in there, but who knows? It might go blue this time.
We had a pretty good demonstration last year.
Yeah.
Lots of people came out, you know. But the trouble with here, you know, I have all kinds of faith in, you know, the people here being Democratic. But the, you know, Conrad Burns has got a lot on the line, and I'm sure he's making deals. And I know, I'm pretty sure that our presidential vote was rigged last time, just not the other votes, which is why I think it never occurred to them that we would get a Democratic governor, and they weren't paying attention.
Well, yeah.
And I think they stole a few Kerry votes here, because it doesn't make sense that we would vote in a Democratic governor, a Democratic Secretary of State, a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and we voted for Bush. I don't think so.
yeah. Well, we're going to – I hope – I hope to put forth a great effort to get that Senate seat this year, and big surprise there in your primaries. And I think we can take the Senate back. I hope anyway.
Well, I'm going to vote. I think Tester will fight. That's my hope, that he won't just concede and wither away. I hope he will fight.
That's all we can ask.
So that's my hope. And when everybody is thinking about a candidate, will they fight?
Right. That's there you go. I think that's number one. I want an attack dog out there that won't give up until the last dog dies.
Because that's the only way you're going to get anybody behind you.
That's right.
You know, that's what the Democrats have to get is this. You know, if there's nobody to follow, if it's wishy washy.
I've said so many times on the program, and I'm sure you've heard me, and I just. I know a lot of people probably don't like the way I put it, but I still think if John Kerry, when John Kerry was being swift boated, I still believe if he would have gone on national TV and said, you know, you low down bunch of no good, how dare you do this, and just got really pissed off and gone after him, I still think it would have done him a world of good.
Well, it's really hard to put yourself out there as a target and then have everybody behind you back off.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of left standing there with your knuckles dragging.
That's right.
Wondering if you're right or wrong.
Look behind you and nobody's there. That's right.
Exactly.
Well, I hope all the Democratic candidates this year get some better advice than they've been getting in the past few elections.
And I wish they'd pass out, I really think the Democratic, I won't give any money to the Democratic Party anymore. I just give to individual candidates. I can't do it any other way. But if they would just spend the money that they collect more wisely, forget television. They just have to forget television, you know, because most of the people who aren't paying attention, you know, it's not going to get to them. I think we should be passing out, you know, little booklets of the Constitution to everybody. Everybody should have that in their house.
Absolutely.
You know, I got it offline, and I sent one to every one of my children. And I said, this is to be in your house.
Have our pamphleteers back again.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Constitution. Everybody should have, because it's getting rewritten.
Well, it is. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
It isn't going to exist. We have to have one in the House. People have to know their rights.
Well, and I hope the party can.
I got a customer in my little.
Well, all right. You go take care of them, and thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ah, yes, Pamela from the beautiful state, the big sky country of Montana. Oh, how I love Montana. I do. I love a lot of, I've been fortunate enough over the years to have been in every state except Hawaii. And I don't know why I've never made it to Hawaii. I guess that takes kind of an extraordinary effort. But I've been in every state except Hawaii. And a lot of it, by the way, on a motorcycle. Which is the way to travel if you really want to see the country. And what a wonderful experience it is to go up through the Dakotas, you know, up through Minnesota and across the Dakotas and up across to Minot, North Dakota and across that way. And, you know, Glacier National Park there in Montana and Browning and just all the wonderful Butte, Billings and Bozeman, Montana and down through the Grand Canyon or the Yellowstone Park and the Tetons and all the way down to Big Bear, the Bear Lake out that way. Fabulous country. Well, this is, I know this isn't a travel log, but I do love that part of the country very, very, very much. The North, the Great Northwest is a very, very wonderful place in this country, and I do enjoy it a lot. I love all the places. You know, there's some places in this country that are such a fooler to people if you haven't been around the country. And one of them I like to pick on, for example, is New Jersey. A lot of people think New Jersey is all like Hoboken. And my apologies to those of you who live in Hoboken, but a lot of people think that's Jersey. And obviously they've never understood why it's really called the Garden State. Gee whiz, there are lots of places in New Jersey that are just absolutely gorgeous, beautiful farmland and all, and same way with Maryland, and there's something wonderful about most of the states that I can think of. All right, I'm going to shut up. I was going to say there's one that I can't think of anything good about, so I'm going to stop right there. I'm not going to admit it. But yeah, it is a great thing, and you know, that's something I think maybe going by the wayside in the country. You know, when I was a kid, it was traditional for our family to get in the car every year in July or last week in June, early July, take a couple of weeks and just travel the country. And what a great way to take in the real flavor of the United States is to do it by car. And that's becoming tougher and tougher to do, what with the price of gasoline and the time that people have off of work and all anymore. But what a wonderful thing it was. My father was, he was a historian. He loved his history. And it was traditional for him if we were going to go, for example, if we were going to go to Yellowstone or to Gettysburg or you know, Charleston or any place we're going to go, he would buy books and make my brother and I study before we went on that vacation so that we'd learn all about it before we got there and could appreciate it more. And what a wonderful thing it was. At the time, I'm not so sure that I appreciated it, but I certainly do now, because there just aren't many little hills and dales in this country that I don't know about. And I love that fact. I wouldn't give that back no matter what. Hey, I don't know how many of you saw this last week. I get carried away talking about things. I wasn't planning on doing the travel log thing there, but I'm really, really beginning to wonder if it's they who are crazy and stupid instead of them thinking that it's the electorate that's wacko. Did any of you see the hearings of the House Armed Services Committee last week? Did any of you see that? Featuring, what's his name from California, Republican Hunter, Duncan Hunter, or King of the Wackos, or Republican Kurt Weldon of Pennsylvania. What is it with Pennsylvania lately? Man, you got Santorum and Kurt Weldon? Whew. Whoa, those are a couple of boys chipped off the same block of wacko right there. Kurt Weldon, my God. But really, after watching what could have passed for a comedy channel program, you really had to wonder if those guys aren't just plain nuttier than a fruitcake. I hope a lot of you saw that, the House Armed Services Committee last week. Of course, what they were all riled up about was this stunning news that Representative Hoekstra from Michigan and Senator Santorum from Pennsylvania, they discovered that the U.S. found this huge stockpile of chemical munitions in Iraq. According to them, anyway, a huge stockpile of WMDs that up till now were just completely unknown to the entire world. And they found out, Hoekstra and Santorum. You know, the only trouble with the whole scene was that everyone who has even a tidbit of knowledge of the whole Iraq story knows we already knew about these aging chemical artillery shells, which are degraded to the point of being almost harmless. They were, after all, Iraq War number one munitions, even previous to that era. And so these idiot Republican congressmen were trying to persuade this General Maples, who was their witness, to say that these things were WMDs even now. And he wouldn't say that. And they kept asking him all sorts of stupid leading questions, trying to put words in his mouth. And the best they ever got was from him was after asking him if some bad guys got this stuff and sneaked it into New York City and put it in the subways there, would it kill people? Maples, this General Maples, somewhat taken aback at this idiotic question, said, "Oh, potentially, yes, sir, it would, potentially." That potentially, in reality, means one might get the same result from dumping a few pounds of mustard gas in the subway. Yes, it might kill some people, potentially. WMDs, kind of far-fetched, boys, kind of far-fetched. But then the committee chairman, Duncan Hunter, and I just can't stand that guy. I don't know what it is about him. Anyway, he contended that on an April report by the U.S. Army's National Ground Intelligence Center, that it's all clear evidence that Hussein's weapons of mass destruction, that they've been found. And he went on to say, and I got it, where did I put that quote of his? Oh, yeah, here he is. "Some may want to play down the significance of this report, or even deny that WMDs have been found in Iraq," Hunter said at last Thursday's hearing, using the abbreviation for weapons of mass destruction, citing the United Nations resolution that called for destruction of all of Hussein's banned weapons. Hunter added that the, quote, "verified existence of such chemical weapons," unquote, proves they were not destroyed, and, end quote, "in part because of such violations, we voted to authorize the use of force in Iraq," end quote. Man, oh man, these guys are grasping at straws. And Representative Ike Skelton of Missouri, the senior Democrat on the committee, countered that the report did not address Baghdad's pre-war chemical weapons program. Rather, he said it was written to address the force protection concerns of our service members in Iraq. Yes, these certainly are munitions, Skelton added, but they are not evidence of pre-war assertions made by the administration. The whole thing was a big wad of cotton candy, like I always like to say. Looks like it's got some meat to it, but as soon as you take a bite of it, you find out there's nothing there. They are grabbing at straws, and they just won't let it ride. Now, I'll give you the fact that I would not want to look as stupid as many of them look right now, having voted and backed this war and backed this stay the course plan. If I'd gotten myself mired in that cesspool along with them, I'd probably be trying to get my way out of it somehow. I would not want to go down in history, have my legacy be that I was idiotic enough to go along with these people on this. And I'm including a bunch of Democrats on that, you know. I just still have to wonder how it is that so many, and I've seen so many of our Democrats, say that, well, we saw that intelligence and, we had to go with it. Well, there's a lot of us out here that did our own digging before that resolution was passed. And we were of the opinion that it was all BS. So where were you guys? I just have to ask that question all the time. I do wonder. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, Guy.
Yes.
This is B. I'm from Punta Gorda, and I've lost you on the internet for the last 40 minutes.
Oh,
it's very frustrating, and I don't know if it's because maybe a storm's in the area or not.
I don't know. We're up and running, and we're streaming nicely on the.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, I've tried everything. Of course, I'm a novice at this anyway.
But, oh.
I really liked your last speaker. She is just fantastic.
Oh, she is. Are you on a dial-up, or are you on...
Yes.
I don't know what that could be.
But I really did enjoy your last speaker.
Well, thank you. She's quite the gal, Katrina VandenHeuvel. There isn't a better spokesman from the left than her. Nobody.
Right.
Every time she gets on TV with some of these talking heads, she usually destroys their arguments.
She puts them down. And by the way, I do not listen to Rush Limbaugh anymore. I haven't for the last 2 years. I don't listen to that bull.
Well.
And then when Ann Coulter's on, I turn off the TV. I feel that we have to do that. We can't give them that freedom that they have to get on there and say all the lousy things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she's a pretty vile individual. I have to agree. Hateful, very hateteful.
Well,
I'm sorry you can't. I don't know what's wrong. Yeah, maybe you should just reboot and try again.
That's what I keep trying to do, and I will continue.
All righty.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Yeah, everything shows that we're okay. We've got quite a few people online right now listening to the program. That's one good thing about the Internet. You can always tell. I promise you I had a letter from the from a soldier friend that has his father lives in Naples, and he has corresponded with us. I think this is the third time we've heard from this gentleman, and I will not give his name because of any possible retribution by the military upon him, but he writes us emails coming from Iraq. This is his second tour there. And I always appreciate getting his letters. I do. And I'll just read it. Mr. James. Obviously, this came yesterday. Mr. James, tomorrow, Americans will go back to work after a long holiday weekend. I just wanted to report that my outfit had a long weekend, too. Since Zarqawi was killed and the powers that be in the American military and U.S. government declared that we've now got them on the run after killing their leader, things have gotten much, much worse. We knew it would be worse when we heard the news about him being killed. The problem is that the American people seem to have this vision of Al-Qaeda as being some sort of military-like group which has invaded Iraq and is causing all of the trouble. It's a false assumption, which has probably been caused by the media at the behest of President Bush. There is no organized group of Al-Qaeda here. It's mostly made up of a ragtag, independent, small bands of guys with no organization at all. What people back home can't seem to get straight is the fact that 99% of the trouble over here is caused by Iraqi insurgents who consider themselves freedom fighters. They are Iraqis, and they have the backing of most of the people here, and why wouldn't they? If our country were invaded and occupied and then handed a government that we didn't approve of, I'd like to think we would fight too. So the problem for us over here, and by us, I mean those of us in the United States military, the problem is that we are stuck in the middle. On one side, President Bush, we're being forced to fight a bunch of people who feel they're defending their country from an illegal invasion. And on the other side, we're seen as a bunch of killers sent by an evil man who will take their oil. How would you like to be in the middle of that? My dad sent me a news clipping which said, quote, "I don't know how the American soldiers can complain about their duty in Iraq because they volunteered for duty over there." Well, yes, I did volunteer for the military. I did so gladly and with a sense of honor and duty to my country. For me, it was not a way to make a living since I already had a very good job. No, I wanted to do my part for America. That's all. But now, after seeing that we have been sent here on nothing but lies by President Bush and his administration, I feel differently about my duty. Yes, he is my commander-in-chief, but a lie is a lie, and believe me, there are very few of our military over here right now who don't know that we were led astray by President Bush in order for us to get control of the oil in this entire region. After being here for a short while, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that we are being used as pawns in a huge chess game. And that chess game is being run by the oil companies, Halliburton, KBR, Bechtel, and others. Billions of dollars have been wasted. Billions. And billions more will be wasted, and these Iraqi people have figured it out too. Right after mission accomplished, the Iraqi people were optimistic about having their country rebuilt because of the promises that came from President Bush. And, for a little while, there actually was some progress made with rebuilding schools, electrical grids, water lines, sewer plants, and more. But that has all stopped now, and the Iraqi people can see with their own eyes that no serious effort is being made to help them. They hate us more each day because of this. Mr. James, I know I've written to you several times about this, and I don't want to be a bother. But I feel the American people are entitled to the truth about this awful situation we are in over here. We Americans are in a no-win situation, and believe me, it isn't a comfortable position to be in. If you and all of the American people could be here to see what is going on, you would soon realize what folly it is for President Bush to even utter the words, "Stay the course." Mr. James, there is no course. I hope you had a good 4th of July. My men and I saluted the flag and sang God Bless America. And I hope God will forgive our great country for what we have done over here. A letter from one of our soldiers. Kind of makes you think, doesn't it? Well, I think we'll go to a break, and we'll be back in just a minute or two.
I've always hated Blockbuster. Donald, Gap, Pepsi, IBM, Starbucks, not quite so much. If I'm not boycotting at least three oil companies, I start to feel out of touch. I wouldn't be seen in Nordstrom. For any such. And I hate Walmart. I don't like whips. I don't like chains. I don't go chopping up my neighbor's brains. Don't really like shopping except at the flea market. I hate Walmart. Now you may wonder, what's all this fuss? Train, take the bus. Well, I found religion, and just between us, I hate Walmart. If you didn't hear the story, well, here's how it is. Big company sell for low cost, drive mom and pop out of business. Pretty soon all over the land, one big square store, identical brand, and that's why. Stop in on three or four towns, encounter different sights and sounds, different if not unique. Different accent, different smell, different things to buy and sell. Now it's all Taco Bell. I hate Walmart. Roll juice, dip and wine, you drive slow, relax your mind. Never knew what you'd find around the next bend. But now the freeway goes so straight, it go right past the pearly gate. I don't feel human, I feel like freight. Walmart. I like to roam, I like to greet individuals on the street. You always know the one you meet is one of a kind. But more and more, they seem to me reflection of something on TV. When we're all alike, nobody's free. I hate Walmart. I boycott Burger King. I boycott New Gingrich. I boycott everything which I've seen advertised. I used to go out for dinner in the diner. Now they say fast food is finer, but it tastes like it fell out of an airliner. It's enough to make you weep. I don't like board games. I don't like brand names. They make inflated claims. They're full of bleep. Everyone I meet is a high-tech killer. Wants to sell me a digital potato peeler. And I don't like Garrison Keillor, cause he's so white. Turn on my radio dial. Like to hear something new once in a while. But it's the same old crap in a brand new style. It's audio rape. Still I try to pick and choose. I turn the dial, but always lose. Once in a while, if you're lucky, maybe one little rhythm and blues, and that's why God made tape. Used to be we wore beads and bells, made our own clothes in our own way. Now we all wear uniforms at Hard Rock Cafe. We're in a state of sartorial decay, and that's why I hate Walmart. There's a pretty spot to pave it over, put a clover leaf over a four-leaf clover. Black paint on a white cliffs of Dover, it never fails. Hope you like this song, thanks a bunch. Could go on, but I gotta go eat lunch. If you didn't like it, I've got a hunch.
at Walmart.
And we're back with the Guy James Show. Back, what do we got, about 25 minutes left in the program here this afternoon, 866-546-5254. We've got a few callers on the line. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
That letter was... He's amazing. He's an amazing writer. The young man...
Well, and he relates that story that we've all heard 100 times. I've seen our congressman say it. I've seen all the right-wing talking heads say it. Well, these people did volunteer, you know.
Oh, that just makes me so mad.
It does me, too.
I wonder which jerk said that.
I could name you on TV a dozen of them that have said it.
I would love to know if it's some chicken hawk. It probably is.
Well, I can tell you for a fact that Limbaugh has said it, Hannity has said it, Ann Coulter has said it. All those people
they
have said that.
They all ought to go over there on their vacation then.
Well, they ought to put on the uniform and go over there outside the green zone someplace. That's what I say. I always like to answer that. Yes, these people did volunteer, but they volunteered with the idea that their commander in chief would be honest with them,
and also be supplied with what they needed.
Exactly,
the protection that they needed.
Exactly,
should be available. Where are they spending all this money that for the military?
You know, when
spending it on our servicemen.
Well, that's right. I mean, I heard a story the other day about the Halliburton people hauling cheese and charging.
I heard that, too.
Yeah.
I don't know where.
Ended up being like $30 a pound that they were charging for this cheap cheese to haul. I mean, you know, profiteering. That's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah. No soul. But another thing, you're talking about Hunter?
Yes.
You know, he's the one, and I'm sure you know this, but he's the one that got up with all that menu, you know. He had them serving, showing what they had to eat down there in Guantanamo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, how they were eating.
He
just
saw that, and he had them bring it out, and he showed them, and then he invited somebody up there to eat with him. And I mean, I'll tell you, I don't know. These people are just something else.
They're desperate to retain power. They're desperate to have their way, to do anything necessary to keep the power and have their way. And that's, you know, they're going to say anything necessary to do that. And they certainly are. That's for sure.
And I think I'm wondering about if Kinley is really dead. That lady said, you know, about his face, she really described that really great, because he could, you know, get lost in, and you know how shabby he dressed when he was going to court?
Yeah. Well.
He could just thrift up, you know, have some plastic surgery. I'm sure he's got money.
Oh,
I don't know. I'm like that. I don't trust them at all. Some of the things I think I wouldn't dare even say.
I know.
What I think.
I feel the same way.
But, I mean, I wouldn't put anything past them. Not anything.
I agree with you.
Anymore, more and more.
That's right.
I just agree.
You
can't put anything past them.
I know. And they're showing us that every day. They do something more, you know, more crazy. This latest thing with Santorum saying, oh, we found the WMDs. I mean,
nice try,
dopey.
coming from you, Santorum, Ocean Sanitary.
Yes.
You know, and another thing about Ken Lay, they're saying on the news that I heard that he was a friend of the Bush family.
That's right.
But do you remember how the president or the resident or the president or whatever described him as, you know, well, he'd met him or something, but he didn't really know him.
Yeah.
And then I heard him questioning Jeb about it, and he was kind of saying, well, he didn't really know him that well, you know.
Yeah, did you see the Christmas cards back and forth between him and Bush that we have seen? My dear friend Ken, how's your wife, and all this and that. Barely knew him, my eye.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks.
And I agree with you on the North Korea, you know. I just think they're doing everything they can to scare us. And, you know, that made me mad back when they did use the fear. because if they were really Christian, God said in the Bible that God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And you know, it made me mad. You'd hear reporters say, oh, the Americans, they're so scared. Well, what do people overseas think about us? My gosh.
They don't think much of us right now. Hey, we need to thank
you. I'm so tired of being spoken for and all that bad.
I know.
But anyway.
Thanks for your call.
For your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, and I do want to remind everybody, speaking of these Republicans right now and all their high morality and ethics that they've promised us, you remember back the Republican contract with America in 1994? You remember that? You remember them all standing on the front steps of the Capitol building? You know many of them are still there, right? You know that. And they promised term limits and all this sort of thing. Let me give you a quote from the Republican contract with America in 1994, and I just love this. Let me quote. In this era of official evasion and posturing, we offer instead, remember this is 1994, we offer instead a detailed agenda for national renewal, to restore accountability to Congress, to end its cycle of scandal and disgrace, and to make us all proud again of the way free people govern themselves. And here's the most important about the part of the contract of America with the Republicans in 1994. Quote, if we break this contract, throw us out. Well, I certainly hope people will take you at your word and throw some people out here very, very soon. Hey, let's go back to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Well, another of your most committed admirers, Guy.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, one quick thought for you and from your early in the program. If I were you, I would continue to ask the opinion of people that you come in contact with from around the world, and I would be not at all surprised if many of them share the views of the ones you talk to that kind of shocked you. I think it is perfectly reasonable for people, wherever there's a free press, to believe that this nation has the greatest threat to the world right now.
Dave, I have to tell you that this year in particular, let's say since January, I have talked to many, many people from out of this country, and I do my best to pin them down. If they're that kind, you know, we have that. If we get into that sort of a friendly dialogue, I do my best to pin them down. And I have yet to meet one person. And maybe they weren't so blunt as the people from Denmark, but I've yet to meet one person that thought anything whatsoever of George Bush other than that he was a threat to peace in the world. Not one single person from outside this country have I met.
And you, sir, see that more clearly than almost anybody. I mean, the man is, and the whole con group that's stolen our White House, you know, the world really can't wait. I don't think we can wait till the next election.
No.
We have to put our brains together, a think tank, and find a way to undo the harm that this White House is doing to this country and the world.
It's critical. It's reached critical mass right now. It really has.
We all have to come up one way or another. We need to do that.
Well, I just hope we can everybody work hard and get the word out this year and not be intimidated by the right-wing media, because we're still behind in the media and we're going to remain behind in the media. I wish there was something I could do to get the Democrats serious about leveling the playing field in the media, but they're not serious. But
there are those trying hard to block our efforts, but we keep with it.
Yep, we do.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dave. I found this cute little item in Vanity Fair I thought you'd like to know about. One of my very favorite people, Catherine Harris. Oh, boy, Catherine Harris. You know, she's like a cartoon figure. Do the rest of you around the country see her as that? Just absolutely a cartoon figure. Let me give you this Vanity Fair. I'll just take a moment to read that, and you folks on the phone, I'll be right with you. This is out of Vanity Fair. 2 years ago, Catherine Harris, best known as the Florida Secretary of State who presided over the agonizing 2000 presidential recount, and now more obliquely known in court papers as Representative B, end quote, went to dinner with Wade, whom she'd met through Cunningham, this is one of the lobbyists, and subsequently got a stack of $2,000 checks for her campaign signed by Wade's employees. Many were written on that same day. Harris would later say she had hardly any idea. Maybe they just liked her politics. In all, Wade gave her $32,000 in illegal contributions. But according to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Wade told Harris exactly what he wanted over the dinner, for which he paid $2,800 at Citronelle, an elegant Washington restaurant, lots of federal funding to build a $10 million counterintelligence facility in her Florida district. He wanted to build it. They also discussed the possibility of his throwing her a fundraiser. In vain did Ed Rollins, who was then Harris's campaign strategist, warn the congresswoman, who is not allowed to receive gifts exceeding $50, he warned her that a $2,800 dinner and a fundraiser might be interpreted as a shady quid pro quo for snagging millions of dollars for her benefactor. "Mitch, what a special evening," she wrote to him. "The best dinner I've ever enjoyed in Washington. Please let me know if I can ever be of assistance," a thrilled Harris wrote by hand in a letter given to me by former MZM employee. Wade called his company that, MZM, after his three kids' name. After insisting she had reimbursed the restaurant for the meal, Harris switched positions recently, saying, "I have donated to a local Florida charity $100, which would more than adequately compensate for the cost of my beverage and appetizer." I believe she set up above that she had a meal, but now it's just a beverage and appetizer. In 2005, Harris had a second dinner with Wade, for which a friend of his tells me he paid more than $3,300. What the hell do you eat for $3,300? And a few months later, a Harris aide named Mona Tate Yost was hired by MZM, that's Wade's company, although a Harris spokeswoman initially said Yost's contracts with her old congressional office were purely on a social level. This, too, turned out to be false. An email I have seen, written in 2005, indicates Yost had promised to approach a top Harris staffer with a meeting. She was working on an MZM draft of a legislative funding proposal that would, Wade hoped, underwrite his $10 million counterintelligence facility. Well, one of the sources on Capitol Hill said, chuckling, "She's so incompetent, she can't be bribed." Oh, how would you like to be called so stupid and incompetent in Washington that you can't be bribed? Now, that's a good one. Hey, let's go back to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, guys, it's Terry in Fort Myers again.
Hi.
How you doing? One thing that I wanted to throw out, you were talking about talking to people, you know, out of the country and what their personal perceptions are based on a distant look at everything. Well, I've got some friends that, some people that I've met quite a few years ago, and we Skype each other. I don't know if you've ever heard of Skype.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, we Skype each other all the time. They're in Sweden. And anyway, so they're always, you know, we've gotten pretty tight. So they're always poking at me and saying things like, "Well, hey, your boy did this," and, you know, talking about Bush, right? Because they know how I feel. And they brought up something. It was just kind of in jest, but they were, you know, the way they brought it to me. But they said something that I wasn't really cognizant of, and I haven't really seen it printed anywhere. And I spent a lot of time on the web, but they're saying that there's a lot of countries that if Bush shows up in, if he lands in those countries, he will be arrested as a war criminal.
Well, I know some. I don't know about him, but I know some of his people, like John Negroponte, can't go to some countries and all. I don't know about Bush, though. I haven't heard that. That's a new one to me.
Now, there is an article that I come across today that is... let's see here. Hang on real quick. It's from the Center for American Progress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a little thing at the very bottom. But it was talking about, let me see if I can find it here. Talking about Bush's friends are not hanging out with him anymore. And there is they got a little link here, and I click that link, and it goes to news.yahoo.com. And the article that comes up is talking about Bush's foreign friends fading fast. And
well, they are. Berlusconi's gone. Blair will soon be gone. I'm trying to think. You know, Putin doesn't have anything to do with him anymore.
Schroeder,
Brock, yeah. Yeah,
Putin, they're... You know, on and on and on. Mubarak, you know, it's just going on and on and on.
Right.
So
he does have that prime minister of Japan, though.
I don't even want to talk about that. Anyway, I sent you a link, okay, in an email just here, I don't know, within 5 minutes ago.
Okay, good.
And it is a link to a site that keeps up-to-date, accurate accounts of all of the coalition casualties in Iraq, the wounded and the killed and et cetera. From, you know, they've got it itemized out, and I mean it's pretty wild. It's somebody's spending some time on it. Let's put it that way. But they're getting their information from Department of Justice and a few other places. You'll be able to see it on there.
Okay, good.
Anyway, I figured you'd like to see that.
Yeah, I will. I'll take a look at it. I will.
Well, you do a great job. Keep it up, and thanks for standing up for America. I'm proud of you.
Hey, thanks so much.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye now. You know, wouldn't you? I thought a lot about this, and I don't know if I've got enough time to talk about it the rest of the program today. I would love to hear your thoughts on it today or tomorrow or whenever. I watched all the patriotic stuff on TV yesterday that I could and last evening, and you know, this is a tough time for people that love America. It is a very tough time. There's so many of us that feel humiliated by the actions of one Junior Bush. And humiliated is the right word. I love my country. And I resent anybody on the right saying that I don't. I don't like all this talk of treason and sedition and all that crap just because we don't agree with them. There's a fine line between the dissent. You know, if we dissent, we have a reason for it. And it's out of love for this country. For no other reason. And the idea that these people, well, they've got the market cornered on patriotism and all this, it's absurd. It's patently absurd. And I strenuously object. And I resent it. I won't ever say that these people don't love their country. I won't ever say that they don't at least think they're doing the right thing. I will steadfastly maintain that they are wrong on what they're thinking. But I won't... I just love to wave a magic wand and bring back people like Ben Franklin and Robert Morris and John Rutledge and who else, Alexander Hamilton and some of the other signers of the U.S. Constitution and hear what they have to say about the government of the United States right now, have them take a good hard look at what's going on. I'd love to hear their comments. And yes, after they got done looking at the computers and all the fancy cars and all the technological advancements and went to the Capitol building and sat in the House of Congress, sat in the House and the Senate and in the White House and read the papers, and after they became aware of what's going on in this country, I wonder what they would think. I wonder what they'd have to say about the phone tapping by the NSA. I wonder what they'd have to say about the spying on our bank records and the other invasions of privacy that have taken place over the past few years under this Bush administration. I wonder how they'd receive the attempts by Cheney, Bush, and their gang of political thugs. What would they have to say about them consolidating all the power in the country in the Oval Office? About the extraordinary efforts they've made to do that? I've read a lot of what many of the founders have written, and nowhere have I read anything that's even remotely claims that the executive branch should be able to do anything they like without consequences. Nowhere have I read that. Nowhere have I read anything even close to that. The liberties these men are taking with the Constitution right now is criminal. But I think these framers, the gentleman I mentioned, I think they'd be aghast at what's happening to our freedoms right now. You know, Ben Franklin, who signed both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, would most likely lecture, and he'd do a good job of it. He'd lecture the president day would-be dictators on what we, the people, actually means. I believe he would say that the signers of that great declaration really did mean we, the people, instead of me, the president. I don't know what gives this group of would-be fascists the authority to do what they're doing. Certainly not the Constitution. The legal community in this nation seems to think that Bush has violated the Constitution several times, at least the great majority of them whose opinions I've read, including some who are most definitely Republicans and are ashamed of what the Bush administration has been doing legally. I almost laughed yesterday when I heard one of the Republican congressmen say that we were guaranteed our freedoms but not our privacy. Can you have one without the other? Can you truly be free without the right to your privacy? Can you be guaranteed privacy without being free? Not likely. It's an absurd statement. It seems this current group of extremists believe that they are the people and that they actually represent the people. They believe that they can do anything they wish and they can interpret the Constitution to mean anything they want it to mean. And that's exactly what they've been doing. They've twisted and turned and pulled and yanked and turned the Constitution of the United States inside out to meet their needs. And it's wrong. You know, it wasn't long ago that we heard a report that at a heated meeting in the cabinet room, that Bush, after being hammered away at by people in his own administration that he can't do this and he can't do that, that it wasn't constitutional, he says, the Constitution's only a damn piece of paper. That's what he's quoted as saying. Well, he's partly right. It's on paper. But it's the most sacred document that this country possesses. It is the backbone, the spine of this country. It's what it was founded upon. It wasn't founded upon anything else but the Constitution of the United States. And some great wise men wrote it. And I'm not saying that these men had everything exactly correct. If they did, we'd never need to amend the Constitution. And nor could they foresee some things that would happen in the future. But that Constitution is the backbone of this nation. And we can't be fooling with it. Not the basic intent of it. And we can't interpret it to mean anything that we want it to mean to serve our purposes. We can't do that. And this administration has endeavored to do that from the very beginning. And I resent it. As a citizen of this country, I resent it. And there are millions of us who resent their treatment of the Constitution of the United States. And I won't have it. And I will protest. And I will speak out. And so should you. What would the founders? What would the founders who put so much time and trouble into that Constitution and some deep thought into it? What would they think of us now? What would be their opinions? Their opinions of us who've allowed this to happen without a serious fight? Many of those men risked their lives to live in a free nation. And look at it now. Look what's happening to that sacred document, the Constitution. And Bush says it's nothing but a damn piece of paper. So says he. We shall see, George. Whether it's the Constitution of the United States that wins out, or your extremist agenda. For as bad as I feel about what is happening to this country right now, I have every faith, that we will overcome these people. We will make it back from the abyss where we stand right now. We will. Because we have that Constitution. And that Constitution will be honored. It'll be honored by men who see what it really is and how it should be revered in this country. We can only hope, but we will prevail. I want to thank you for listening to the program today. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a great day, everyone.